Oh, great.
Don't have to worry about being live, though. So how's Canada?
It's Canada.
Is it cold? You're not cold now.
No, it's not. It's not freezing or anything yet. I guess we're still got rain and whatever. No snow in the mountains yet either. So we're I guess it's still summer here. So although winter comes a little earlier here than most places. So.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, I guess summer will be over at the end of August probably. So we'll might as well enjoy what we have and do our best. So.
So what kind of temperature do you have right now?
Oh, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 degrees Celsius.
Oh, you can't convert that to Fahrenheit, can you?
No, I don't have any conversion table here at the moment. So.
So would that be cold enough to be or warm enough to be outside in a t-shirt?
You would freeze. Well, not freeze, but you would get cold. Yeah.
So it's more like sweatshirt weather or light coat?
Sweatshirt, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Unless you're hiking up a mountain or something, then it could be t-shirt weather. Although we used to play hacky sack in minus 30 Celsius too. So, I mean, that was really cold, but when you're sweating outside, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Minus 30 Celsius?
Yeah, I guess that would be... I guess it converges at minus 35 Fahrenheit in Celsius, so... Or wow. 40. Anyway, wow. Yeah.
You know, not to drastically change the subject or anything, but...
Please do.
I don't know if you've seen this movie yet. You remember the controversial photograph with Askett and Neera that turned out to be two of the Dean Martin girls?
Yes.
And one of the Dean Martin girls, I forget her name. If I thought about it a while, I'd remember it.
Michelle de la Fauve?
Yes, that's her.
Yeah.
Who just visited Billy and Hinterschmidt-Rudy?
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you see the movie?
I watched it. Yeah, it was really interesting.
It was interesting. And one of the things I liked about it was Billy seemed kind of vibrant and younger.
Mm-hmm.
Like he used to, when he was speaking in English, it was more like back in his Randy Winters days. Which is, I just like him that way. I don't know. That's funny.
Yeah.
Billy,
Well, he is pleasant to talk to. I don't know. I think it's just like anybody else. If you're open and have good conversation, you can have good conversation.
But he didn't speak to you in English, though.
A little bit. He would have to revert to English when I couldn't understand something. Somebody else would have to translate sometimes for me too. But I would try and do as much German as I could. So. Yeah.
But they spoke to her and her her friend in English. Mm-hmm. I hadn't heard Billy do an English interview in so long. It was really kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah.
For us wimpy English-speaking people.
I would love to be able to read all the stuff in German, like, really well. That would be great one day. That's kind of my big goal. So,
well, you know, I would like to order this book, Love Letter 27.
That's...
Do you know that book?
No, I don't.
Well... I'm not so sure that this particular one is actually public. This may be something. Well, maybe you know this there, because you're kind of I forget all the different degrees of membership. What level of membership do you have?
I'm just a basic passive member. Nothing passive.
Well, some members have access to certain material and certain spiritual teachings, and this particular one is called Love Letter 27, and it's the most profound information on the creation, particularly related to love, that I've ever heard him write, and it's just phenomenal stuff. So I might not be able to get this now that I'm thinking of it, but they have another book called The Law of Love, which I assume might be close.
Yes. I don't know if they're going to be... Is that the one talking about relationships and things, or is that...
I don't know, tell you the truth. I really don't know.
Because there's different kinds of love, right? So, I mean, there's, you know, relationship love and so on. And there's an interesting book about that, and I kind of flipped through a little bit of it. It's actually a pretty tiny book. And it got me thinking about a few things.
Now, let me throw something at you here, because when I'm talking about love, I'm not talking about people love. Okay?
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm the least interested in that of any person that you might ever come across. But this is something different. Let me read this to you.
Go for it.
I think I've experienced this before, but I didn't know what it was. The person must only be willing to see and recognize this love, and he will begin to feel it. If he opens to the love of creation and he allows it to flow into himself, he becomes filled with respectful gratitude and great joy. Each smallest plant, each ever so tiny animal was created in love by creation. Each creation existing according to the same law of love. All life is in the absolute perfection that which it should be through the love of creation. And except for humans, every life form lives exactly by creation's plan. Only humans have turned away from love and must now learn again what true love is. The infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life this love lies hidden. And it just goes on and on and on like this. So this to me is, and I even skip my favorite parts, but it's one of the most awesome, and I quote this all the time on the radio show, this particular thing. But yeah, I love this, man. It's just awesome.
I'll have to read it. It sounds wonderful.
You have to look it up. It's translated by, is her name Robin?
Oh, Robin Foley?
I think so. She's from Australia, is she, or is she from Canada?
Mm-hmm. No, Australia, yeah.
Australia, yeah. Very, very good.
Okay.
I don't think this is completely open to the public. I think has only been partially allowed to be translated.
It's a worthwhile subject. I was just thinking today, you know, it would be so fantastic is just to go out and walk in nature a little bit, just so I can reconnect with that exactly what you're describing there. Man, I just so missing that lately. I'm so caught up in all these situations with these people, and they're all nuts, and I'm just trying to make sense of, you know, anything. And just getting further and further away from that, and it's just, yeah, it's time to reconnect.
Well, I now that I'm going through the Mind of Thoughts for the sixth time, because I'm a remedial learner, I guess I have to read his books six. I probably have to read this 10 times. But there's one section here. It's between pages 200 and 230. Where he talks more about what neutral positive thinking is. And I took notes, and they're all over my website. I'm also scribbles around the house here. And I hit like seven major points, and it relates to what you were saying about craziness and crazy people. Because when things get really rough, I remember these seven things, because they come from the book, and it says, I tell myself, I'm optimistic, I'm confident, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm thankful, and I'm enthusiastic. And that takes away the garbage. That starts me back on neutral positive thinking. And then I just added one more. I am in harmony. Is my seventh concept. So, but yeah, just little things like this in this book are so helpful.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned, because I was just reading about neutral positivity before you called, so.
Is that right?
In the psyche, yeah. So, pages, I guess, 160, 162 or whatever, in the English version anyway. So.
Why don't you read a little bit?
Oh, well, it was just kind of talking about, you know, how nature... well, actually, you know what? One thing I was kind of exploring, I guess, again, as you're saying, you're kind of a remedial learner. I am too. So,
Go over it 6 times. I'll probably have to go over it 10 times. This whole
thing. Oh, geez.
You know, yeah, so much in there.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I forget things because, you know, I get caught up in situations. But, you know, that's a way to gain contrast. You know, because that's how you learn, is through experiences, and then you think about them. So these books kind of provide a way to explore those experiences and I was kind of getting caught up in a lot of negativity lately and so forth, and it was kind of getting worse and worse, and I was thinking to myself, hey, you know what, I remember reading in the Psyche, well, that's pretty much what the whole book is about, because, you know, your psyche is basically everything. I mean, it's not everything, but I mean, it's really, in terms of your conscious health, if you don't have a healthy psyche, you've really got nothing. So It's the psyche is just amazing, and so I've been kind of rehashing, I guess, for myself in reviewing what is neutral positive thinking and how to, because a lot, you know what, the main source of the problem for me lately has been people who are only positive, who they completely ignore any negatives whatsoever, and the negatives are there anyways. They build up and they build up and they build up, and then these people, after a while, will have to be forced to admit, and they always are, again and again over the years, forced to admit that, oh yeah, you know, all this positive blah 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 stuff that I was talking about before is a bunch of nonsense. Well, yeah. It's because they weren't being neutral positive, you know? They were just being, it's like a positive degeneration, or I guess they call it a positive Aussautung.
Aussautung, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but it also works with the negative. You know, if you're too negative in a degenerative form, then it degenerates into a negative situation as well. So I find this, you know, in the contacts is, for me, probably the thing I think about the most in terms of the spirit teaching. I think it's probably the most important thing that, you know, I just, the whole point that, you know, there's this whole positive thinking movement and so on and so forth. And basically what they're trying to do is ignore the negative, ignore the negative, ignore the negative. And it doesn't work. Of course it doesn't work.
Yes.
So it's like saying 2 + 2 = 3. Well, you know, yeah, you can keep reaffirming yourself that, but you know, if you come down to economics or, you know, whatever, trying to make a cake, you know, with a recipe or, you know, all this kind of stuff, you have to go back to, no, 2 + 2 = 4. And that's the end of it. There's no discussion there. I mean, but I just, you see that with religious people, they're trying to assert something that isn't true. And it's a positive degeneration. So it's not a natural forming neutral ground anymore. And so that's why it collapses. It's just like trying to build a building on a weak foundation. Of course it's going to collapse. So it's,
It, speaking of religion, it does sound like in many ways it's on the verge of collapse.
I sure hope so. After these last few weeks, I've been thinking about that more and more and more, and I've thought about it lots before, but so, man,
are you having family issues with religion?
Oh, huge. Like, it's just, it's, I don't talk about religion. I don't even talk to them anymore about anything. Like, it's just watching their behavior and being at the receiving end of it. And I'm just sitting there and having to take it. And I'm just, you know, eventually I just blow up. I'm like, okay, I can't take this anymore. Like, this is just driving me nuts. And so it's over the top, you know, and I just see these situations because these people have grown up a lot more into the religion than I ever was. And they still adhere to it and they're still into it. And I see, you know, certain people are saying they're not religious, but they act completely religious. Like they don't check first before they assert something. They don't, see some if something is true before they really go for it and act as if it's true, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's just ongoing. It's just these behaviors that are just so ingrained in them. And it's just, oh man, you can't live with that because they don't care. They don't listen. They're not interested at all, you know, in what's real. They're just interested in what makes them feel good. And that's it. So a lot of the times it comes down to them saving face, which Billy wrote a great article about that. And I'm so glad I read that years ago. And saving face is just such a waste of time. And so that's kind of another positive degeneration in many instances. It's trying to reassert too much of a positive image of yourself, and it's not, if it's not real, then it collapses. So,
I guess I've told you about my little visitors from the, I forget which church it was, Jehovah Witnesses. Daniel, right, I mean, I had a great time with them. They came back. And they were going to come back a third time. They called me to come back the third time. And I just never got back to them.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it was. It was just, I like to talk about the Bible. But I talk about it now more from the Meyer perspective. Mm-hmm. And though I find the best thing to do is to ask them simple questions.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, remember when Cain killed Abel and then Cain takes a wife in the land of Nod? Where did his wife come from? Because according to the Bible, or most people's interpretation and literally what it says, you know, there was only Adam, Eve, and their two sons, Cain and Abel. Where did the land of Nod come from? And then if you read a little bit farther, he was building a city. It says, literally, that Cain was building a city. And my questions are, who was the city for? And how did he even know what a city was?
Right.
Yeah. I asked them the same kind of questions. I go, you know, I remember reading this when I was 13 years old, and I had these questions, and I have not gotten a good answer. Mm. And I'm a whole lot older than 13.
Yeah.
So I said, here you have a story that's accepted throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And it has a hole in it big enough to drive a semi truck through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just a little. And then my next thing I always like to go to is Numbers 31:7, where Moses commands the army of Israel to wipe out the Midianites. So they kill all the soldiers. Mm-hmm. And then they come back and Moses is enraged because they didn't kill the women and the children. I mean, isn't that nice? I mean, this is really okay. I mean, normal civilized people would, you know, read this and go, whoa.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
And then Moses goes on, well, you know, so go back and kill the women and the children. But, and this is where it gets really interesting, keep the virgins for yourself. Oh, wait a minute. So these Midianites were so bad, you had to kill them all but the virgins.
Right.
Why do you get to keep the virgins? And then they even wrote down how many they kept.
Right.
In this chapter, they kept 32,000 virgins.
Oh, geez, eh? I mean, what did they do with them after?
Right? Well, they didn't tell us that part of the story.
Right.
But there is a Italian guy who is a Hebrew expert. I mean, what he did, he worked for like 20 years or 15 years for the Vatican, translating Hebrew texts. So they finally, he was so good at it, he was recognized as one of the best in the world. They said, would you translate the Old Testament for us? And he translated it literally with no religious overtone whatsoever. And awesome. Instead of Lord and Adonai and in terms like that, he went back to the original, and where the word Elohim appears, instead of calling that God or whatever term they would insert, he would interpret it very literally, like those guys over there, those people over there, or whatnot. But you have to listen to this guy, because you've heard the Giza intelligence story, I know. Mm-hmm. And that's what he basically says of the Old Testament. It goes perfectly hand in hand with the whole Giza intelligence story, but anyway, I like to talk to those kind of people because I've got the questions.
Yeah.
I've got all the questions.
You know, it all depends. And I was kind of thinking about that today and the whole situation here and so on. And I was thinking to myself that, you know what, there's people, you know, that have good ideas and people that have bad ideas. But you know what? It's not those two that I'm concerned about. It's the people that don't care about their ideas at all. Because those are the ones that don't correct anything ever. And that's the problem for me. So, you know, whether somebody is right or wrong, I could care less. What I really care about is whether somebody is really interested in actually learning to figure what those things are. And so for me, it's the kinds of people that don't care what their ideas are, what their thoughts are, what their education is, what reality is, that concern me. And so, like you, I've had conversations with other Christians who are open to, certain questions and things like that. And I think that's wonderful. And, you know, it's the people, however, who really don't question anything and who really, you know, just they don't show any motive whatsoever to learn or to think or to discern, fiction from truth. Those are the ones that concern me. Those are the ones that are really, you know, psychopathic, I would say.
What you say is very profound. It really, really is.
I thought about it today. I was writing and I was looking at that and I thought, it has nothing to do with right or wrong answers. It's just, do you have the interest to learn? That's everything there, you know? If you don't have that, you've got nothing.
Well, are you dealing with people that are kind of lost in the religious fog, so to speak?
I think they're just so far beyond that I think they just suppressing things in their minds and their consciousness, I should say, and it's just a, such a huge suppression that I don't know what it is exactly. I've been trying to make sense of it my whole life, actually. And it's really interesting, and it rings more to the sense of sort of pathological behavior. And that's, to me, more what it looks like than anything else. And having read, certain things about psychopathic tendencies and so forth that are, really no remorse for anything and not acknowledging, not listening to anything that anyone says and not caring and, really having no interest whatsoever in truth and learning and admitting one's mistakes or anything like that, like being completely so far beyond that there's just really no hope of even having a discussion. Like they'll say one thing 1 second and then a minute, like not even 5 seconds later, they'll say that they never said that before. And that's just really insane, really insane. So I think the only thing a person can do in that situation is to create distance. And because there's really nothing else that, you know, nothing else that can be done. They're not open to reason. They're not open to anything.
And, you know, I'm a strange bird. You probably know that very well. People listening to the show know that very well. But
we're all strange.
But like, I like a lot of times to watch the documentaries on some of the televangelists. Like, have you ever heard like of the guy Benny Hinn?
No, I don't think so.
Oh man, I'll have to send you some links. He heals people. Right?
Okay.
With the power of God, of course.
Right.
And he travels all over the world, and he gets $100 million a year from his listeners. Now, how much of that is put back in his ministry? Probably a lot of it, because now he has Lear jets and things like that he has to shoot around the world with. And then he has one of, you know, his sessions where the people come up on stage and he quote-unquote heals them. And, you know, some of them may actually get better by the power of their own thoughts.
Yeah, yeah. You but that has nothing to do with him.
No, not really. Not really. So, it's very, have you heard of that another one from Texas? His name is Kenneth Copeland. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
He has, well, he's been in trouble with the government a couple times.
Okay.
He has 2 Lear jets. He has, I know, it's absurd, isn't it? It's $40 million a piece. They are the top of the line Lear jets. I mean, can't get any better. He's got 2 of them.
Jeez.
And he has this giant mansion in Texas. I mean, it just, you know, it's so huge, you can't even. And he built a runway for his Learjets.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was one of those cargo cults. No, I'm just kidding.
No. But he's got all kinds of planes. But wow. He's another one that, I don't think he heals people, though.
No.
Another one is Joel Osteen. Okay. Who, he makes about $100 million a year too. But
geez.
I don't think he heals people. Maybe he does, I don't know. But
right.
Now think about, I mean, it's really huge. This is very, very popular, and these people have gigantic followings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how much in need people are to get,
you know, sorry, go ahead.
To get a hold of real information, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you know that? Do you know this actually relates to a documentary I did see one time with Darren Brown, and this guy is like a magician. And what he did basically was he actually trained somebody to like become a spiritual healer, you know, so to speak, and to go around and do the circuit kind of thing. And people were falling for it in the United States. I guess it had to be like in Texas or whatever it was. I think it was in Dallas. That they did like a big, you know, event or whatever, and they pretended that this guy was a spiritual healer, and then he basically explained at the end of the thing that no, it's all bullshit. So,
did he really?
yeah. So, but they were totally into it. They were falling for it, and they, you know, some of them were like, oh yeah, you know, this is really working, and all this kind of stuff. And but that's what the Meyer material goes into, is that it's your own consciousness that's doing that. It's not them. It's not, it's, you know, it's not the other person that's doing it to you. It's yourself doing it to yourself. And there is a legitimate thing there. And we all know about the placebo effect, for example. It works. And there's also the nocebo effect, which is like the negative version where you get sick based on, you know, your
thoughts.
Your thoughts. Yeah, exactly. And so it works. It does work, and even doctors and so on will say that, yes, the placebo effect is real. I mean, everyone can agree on that, and so, and it's more, you know, there's more to it, of course, than just the placebo, too, but your thoughts are very powerful, and that's, I think, you know, the one thing that the contacts are trying to teach us, and you know, that Billy and his friends and whatever who he's worked with his whole life are really trying to teach us that you don't have to pay these guys hundreds of millions of dollars to you know
You know, though, Daniel, they can pay me a few million. I'm not going to complain. That's terrible. I shouldn't say that. The next thing I'll do is be a televangelist.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, let me read this.
Don't forget your friends.
Right, exactly.
Of course, you won't have any by then, but yeah.
I know. Okay. Okay, here, this is interesting. With problems, difficulties, and errors, one must always search for a creative and constructive solution, which is also progressive and therefore positive. Thinking in a neutral, positive, equalized form also means always being objective, realistic, enthusiastic, hopeful, and optimistic. You know, and one of the things I'm getting this time through the book is that neutral positive is a little more positive than I realized. Mm. You know, optimistic, enthusiastic, hopeful. Nice. That's pretty positive in some ways. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But,
well, I have some examples here of what different kinds of thinking, you know, negative thinking and positive thinking and so forth here on this page. Actually, I might as well just read them. So, for example, of, you know, a negative thinking, you know, I am ill, I am in pain, and the reaction of your subconscious would be, I am ill and I am in pain. So, and another one would be, you know, it's a little bit more indirect. So it's like attempted healing of the psyche. It's called negative opposite thinking. So in this case, they're saying, every day I feel better and better, etc., which equals in your subconscious mind, because your subconscious only interprets things, you know, in the now. It doesn't discern now from later or, you know, anything like that. What it's saying with every day I feel better and better is I am ill and I am in pain.
Wow.
Because better and better, it means, well, better than what? So you're still thinking about the negative in that sense. So whereas, you know, for an example here of a healing psyche or an absolute neutral thinking or positive thinking or a wishful dream, it would be like the rose is wonderfully beautiful, or how marvelously warm the sun is, you know, and the reaction of the subconscious mind is the rose is wonderfully beautiful and how marvelously warm the sun is. So I don't know if there's any on the next page, but no, I don't see.
Well, now we may have different versions of the psyche, but what page are you on?
I'm on 162 here. So.
I've noticed this before. Once in a while, I'll have a different. No, here it is. I got the same version.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So
every day I feel better and better. Reaction of the subconscious. I am in ill. I am in pain. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah. So right above that, there's the paragraph. You know, it says that real positive thinking means absolute neutral positive thinking. Thus, not contrarily speaking against a matter. Absolute neutral positive thinking for the psyche also further means that a really completely neutral topic must be used for the thinking, something that in no wise stands in any relation to the negative, terrible thing. So, that's then you great. Have the examples.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's quite helpful.
It is. Just the page before, they're kind of going into, you know, how nature deals with, you know, a negative and so forth, and in a neutral sense, so, or an over positive or over negative degeneration or imbalance, I should say, and so, which turns into a degeneration in the end. So I just think it's a fascinating, you know, few pages, and I've been kind of going over this the last few days, and it's really actually starting to help me to regain my own, you know, like I can breathe and, you know, I'm here. I'm actually, you know.
Okay. So here's the thing. I need to go back over this big time. So what happens, I guess, is the terrible things go into the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And then the subconscious tries to push these terrible things back into the conscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Exactly. So... yeah, and so I'm still, you know, trying to work it all out, and I think it's just fascinating because one of my favorite books before I got into the Meyer material was the book by Jim Collins, and it's called Get Good to Great, you know, why some companies make the leap and others don't. And it can be applied to, you know, nonprofit organizations and so on and so forth too. But one of the themes all the way throughout the book, and it was like a research thing done at Stanford, and we had like a bunch of his best students from over the years that did this research. And one of the main things throughout the whole book was this neutrality and the importance of neutrality and neutral thinking and not letting the negative get out of hand. And it's just like a garden. And they didn't use this analogy, but I like to use this analogy of a garden, because if you're trying to make something beautiful grow or something nutritious grow, you have to pull the weeds.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely.
So, and people, you know, people, their version of positive thinking is, well, just leave the weeds. Just let them grow. Just ignore them. Yeah, sure. That's going to help. Mm. You're going to end up with a garden full of weeds and no food and you'll starve. So, you know, it's an example, and it's a symbolic example that it's very real. It's very real. And so you have to do this with music. If you want to do well in music, you have to really practice scales. You have to do it with a metronome, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, and you can't stray from that. And if you really want to learn it. So.
Well, one of the things that struck me when you were talking earlier is the verb tense, that it has to be like is for it to be neutral positive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Can't, if it goes out of that is, you're saying the subconscious drops the ball and says, oh, no.
Yeah, if you're saying, yeah, for example, I would like, or, you know, this would be nice, that's a negative.
It's actually negative to your subconscious.
Yeah, it's telling it that, well, it's not there, so, well, okay, so you're in a bad situation. Here.
So does that infer that the subconscious kind of draws its own conclusion?
Well, it just thinks in the present. It doesn't discern, like, for example, from a dream from reality. You know, like if you're there thinking about a lemon and how it tastes and, you know, all this kind of stuff, then your mouth starts watering. Well, that's your subconscious mind. It doesn't mean there's a real lemon there and you're, you know, physically reacting to it. It's just even the thought of a lemon. So if you're dreaming, like a wishful dream, for example, or a negative, you know, dream or whatever it might be, your subconscious is always reacting to that in the present, and it's always in the present. There's no future or past in the subconscious mind or thinking. I guess I don't know if you want to say thinking, but it's recording. It's sort of a mirror of you. And the point of the conscious mind, I guess, is to sort of to be the driver, you know.
So the subconscious, it then must have information that maybe the conscious mind does not have.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like a big recording device, basically. So
no kidding.
You know, all the stuff about our previous lifetimes, it's attached to our spirit form and so on and so forth, which has, you know, information about many, many things and that, you know, our conscious mind isn't aware of. And later on, we'll be able to use that. But right now we can't. So
this is very interesting because I think I may have, I'm forgetting where I read this, probably on the Billy Meyer Wiki somewhere. And then I took it and put it in my notes. That the subconscious, now correct me if you have information that contradicts this, but what I was reading was that this, like the unconscious, let's say the unconscious, like if you touch a hot stove, pull your hand back, it happens instantly. Mm-hmm. So the unconscious is like the gatekeeper. It's the first thing that engages reality. And that's why we can pull our hand back and not get burned, because if we had to make that decision, we had to think about it, it would take a second or two and we'd be fried.
Yeah.
So the unconscious observes reality or engages with reality. And then what my understanding is, it decides at that point whether to immediately take action, in the case of you put your hand on a hot stove, or it says, oh, this is something profound. And if it's profound, it will dump the information off to the subconscious. And then the subconscious then is going to mull it over. And eventually try to contact the conscious, I guess. Isn't it bizarre how all this is going on? I'll tell you what, I know this. I have some things in my subconscious that must be really wanting to come out. Like, I had this weird dream, maybe it was yesterday, and I don't dream very often, or I don't recall them. I think I push them back into my subconscious, what I do. Right. But there was some kind of dream that I had where I had to roll out of the way of something. And I rolled right off the bed. Boom, hit the hardwood floor. It's hilarious. I'm so tired, though. I told my wife, I said, I fell off the bed. She goes, yeah, you fell off the bed. And I'm like, I'm really tired. I'm going back to sleep for a while. I went right back to sleep for like 15 minutes, and then I got up. I mean, who does stuff like that? You know, crazy. So there's some kind of issue, right?
Right.
In my subconscious. Don't know what it is. Still don't know what it is.
Well, it's just sorting things out. It's always kind of working things out, and I don't know if it's working things out. I guess it's main... See, that's where I'm kind of... I need to learn a little bit more about this, you know, because I know the conscious mind definitely is there to work things out. And so the subconscious is sort of just a mirror, and I think it's more just sort of a present sort of snapshot, maybe, of where you are. And the point of the conscious mind is to use that and to try and make sense of things. So,
Yeah, that's how you said about you said a mouthful there, trying to make sense of things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you got the whole Titanic. You know, it's floating on the water, and then you got this huge ship. Well, what controls it is one little guy in the top of the ship. Well, that's the conscious mind versus the subconscious. I mean, the subconscious mind is huge, and it's got all all the information that you know, but it's. It's being able to use that and steer it and maneuver it and use it, you know, and try to make sense of things. Dreams are a huge part of that. And I dream a lot. I don't always know what I'm dreaming, but sometimes I do. And I know my wife had a dream that she had gotten pregnant, and I thought, oh no. She doesn't usually dream. She doesn't usually remember her dreams. And I was like, oh, no. Really?
But it turned out to be true, right?
It turned out to be true, yeah. So
my goodness. Oh, yeah. Boy.
Yeah.
The subconscious is wild.
It is wild, and I have been trying to make sense of it for a long, long time. And
Is music... Is it really freeing something in the subconscious or in the unconscious mind? Sometimes I'm thinking that it does.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, like if you improvise, for example, in music, you know, if you're well-trained and so on, you know, ideas come out that you never practiced.
They're there, though.
They're there and very clear, like very distinct, and you can... You know, the ideas come out and it's wonderful. And it's like, ooh, okay.
I wish I would have recorded that, right?
Yeah, right.
So your conscious mind can learn it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I like to practice, you know, and record while I practice just to go over ideas and to learn things and so on, too. It's wonderful. So, yeah. No, I think the most subconscious sort of work I've ever done has been done with music. And because, you know, tapping into personalities of other musicians to sort of capture an idea or capture a feeling or something.
Do you remember a singer, Gordon Lightfoot?
Yeah.
Do you remember when he did The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald?
I've heard that, actually. Oh, I heard that.
You've got to hear it again.
Yeah.
You've got to listen to the words and that whole music.
He's good. I actually really like some of his music. It's really beautiful. Yeah.
I created a Pandora radio station that plays just the people I like, or,
oh, cool.
or you know, it's a lot of people, a lot of different yeah. positions, but the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald is the one of the most beautiful and haunting things that you ever come across. You know what the song's about, right?
I guess, well, the Edmund Fitzgerald was a big boat that sank, I guess, in Canada, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it was in Lake Superior.
Yeah, yeah.
Gigantic. I think it was carrying ore or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'll listen to the music is so beautiful and his singing is so beautiful, but if you listen to the words and the way these sailors are dealing with the fact that they're all about to die is so profound. If you think of the subconscious and the unconscious and minds and all that, and the song is phenomenal in that way. It's kind of a negative topic, but I just find it tremendously beautiful. There are also
I don't think it's negative at all. I think if you're examining, you know, death, I think it's a very, very positive effect in the end, because you really appreciate life a lot more and you're able to use it a lot more.
Well, there's one line where the cook says, he comes up on deck and says, "Boys, I'm sorry, it's too rough to feed you." And he comes up at like noon or something like that. And then he comes up, you know, and it's getting close to the evening. I forget what time it was. And the cook comes up and he says, "Boys, there's water coming in. It's been good to know you." I was just like, oh my God. You know, isn't that the way life is? You know, so casual. Oh, by the way,
yeah,
we're all going to die.
Yeah, well, what else are you going to do, right?
Right, exactly. It's just so casual, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. What?
Yeah. Well, in that situation, I don't see that there's much to do except just have, you know, take it lightly and enjoy it or whatever.
Well, you know, I focus more on music, which is instrumental. But there are some really good singers and artists that do write interesting music. And the words, I think, are very interesting. One of them, of course, you've heard John Denver, right? Remember, what is it, Annie's song? You fill up my senses like night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, just like a storm in the desert, like a sleeping blue ocean.
Wow.
You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Just beautiful stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And mm-hmm. it's all written in the present.
Ah, I never thought about that.
I have to think about that sometimes when I'm writing lyrics. It's like, it doesn't sound as good when it's written, you know, in the past tense or in the future tense. It sounds great when it's in the present tense, and it's way more empowering.
I think the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald might be all in the present tense too.
I would imagine so, yeah.
That is interesting. So that must be a mechanism that pulls you in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And it must pull the whole mind in, right? Like you were saying before.
Yeah, because you get immersed in the story then. You're not looking at the story anymore from, you know, an outside point of view. You're the one talking then to yourself in a sense through the lyrics. So it's when it's written in the present tense like that, then yeah, you get way more empowering a story than you do if it's in any other tense.
Mm.
So that's what made those, you know, those super positive, you know, whatever, you know, let's make the world great songs, you know, all that kind of stuff, really cheesy, I find, because they were very rarely in the present tense. You know, it's like, oh, one day the world will be this and all this kind of stuff and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's hard to relate to that.
It is hard to relate to that.
So, yeah, and that's why.
You know, I think the world could be so fantastic that we couldn't even imagine it if we were all, though, studying the spiritual teachings and applying them.
Well, here's an interesting thought. the world is fantastic because we have the option to make that.
There you go. Is is current tense, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have the option to make that. You know, the heaven and hell that we make for ourselves is of our making. So yeah, it's the option that we have. So it's only a really cool world that would allow that. So, and I think it's great too to see that, you know, nobody is immune from falling asleep at the wheel. You know, anyone who dares to try it will, you know, reap the consequences of laws of cause and effect, that everybody is, you know, part of that. So I think that's a good thing. And the negatives that result from falling asleep at the wheel, for example, are essential to our learning. So
the negatives of falling asleep at the wheel. Now that was profound, man. That was very profound. Let me. Can you bear with me a little bit? Let me read a few of these lyrics to you.
Yeah, please.
From the wreck of the Edna Fitzgerald. The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. The good ship and crew was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain, well seasoned, concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded from Cleveland. And later that night, when the ship's bell rang, it could be the north wind they'd been feeling. The wind in the wires made a tattletale sound, and a wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late, and the breakfast had to wait, when the gales of November came slashing. When afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind. When summertime came, the old crook came on deck saying, "Fellows, it's too rough to feed you." Oh, when supper time came, I'm sorry. When supper time came, the old crook came on deck saying, "Fellows, it's too rough to feed you." And at 7 p.m., a main hatchway caved in, and he said, "Fellows, it's been good to know you." The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and the crew was in peril. And later that night, when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Now listen to this, and think of this in terms of the creation, as opposed to the religious term of God. And the way Gordon sings of this is so beautiful. He says, "Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? The searches all say they'd have made Whitefish Bay if they'd put 15 more miles behind her. They might have split up, or they might have capsized. They may have broke deep and took water. And all that remains is the faces and names of the wives and the sons and the daughters." Now, if that is not the perfect image of creation, neutral, even though it radiates love, all these men died because of the waves and the wind. And because they, like you said, they kind of fell asleep at the wheel, right? In some sense. Anyway, it goes, "Lake Huron rolls, Superior sings in the rooms of her ice water mansion. Old Michigan steams like a young man's dreams. The islands and bays are for sportsmen. And further below, Lake Ontario takes in what Lake Erie can send her. And the iron boats go, as all the mariners know, with the gales of November remembered. In a musty old hall in Detroit they prayed, in the Maritime Sailors' Cathedral, The church bell chimed till it rang 29 times for each man on the Edmund Fitzgerald. The legend lives on from the Chippewa and down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Superior, they said, never gives up her dead when the gales of November come early. Now, is that not an amazing piece of music? My goodness, that is so profound.
That's poetry.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear too many artists like that these days.
You sure don't.
I love that.
Was it in the 70s and 80s? It was in the 70s and 80s. I don't know what happened. That was such a good, important time.
Oh, huge. Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people were born on purpose or whatever around the music industry, or it's just somehow it just amalgamated in that time. It's just such a great, great time.
But didn't you say in your notes that you thought the Meyer material had to become popular in the 70s or something, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah, of course, with the advent of the way technology was going and so on. So, and actually, it's interesting that you mentioned the
calculations or whatever you call them.
Well, that too. But I mean, earlier in the show, you were talking about with Michel Delafave.
Yeah.
But after that interview, I guess they were asking Christian some questions as well as he was driving them down to the train station. And he talked about actually how the internet was given to our scientists by the Planarn. And so if it hadn't been for that, the information in the contacts would have been snuffed out. And that's exactly what I had calculated before I found the case. And yeah, so that's how I pinpointed it to 1975 in Switzerland. So,
wow.
So it's interesting that they talked about that. So I guess it's being translated now into German. So I'm happy to say that. It's 45 or 48 pages long now. So.
Oh, your writing is?
Yeah. So.
My goodness. And, how long is it in English?
No, well, 45 or 48 pages. So, depending on how you're looking at it on the computer. But
now, do you consider it complete?
It's getting pretty close. I think I might just add a few pictures and things to, you know, for examples of, you know, what George Lucas was talking about versus digital versus film photography and stuff like that. And you know, I might add some other examples of what Chris Locke and Raoul Zal wrote in their books in their recent book. With their analysis and so on, you know, being able to demonstrate your own research and to do your own research, you don't have to rely on experts anymore. And so,
no, you don't, do you?
No. So if you learn the scientific method in terms of actually measuring, not just memorizing facts, but actually measuring, you know, doing actual measurements, then you're on your own. You don't need to depend on experts anymore. So then, you know, for a case like this that's so controversial and so important at the same time, it's probably the most important skill you can learn. So if we're going to survive as a species, as a planet. So,
you know, when I was originally planning for the show tonight, I was going to play all these clips, which I, since we've already talked an hour, I'm going to wait for another day for those.
All right.
But some of the things I, for example, wanted to talk about, food for future programs, would be this whole thing about the F-35. And that may sound strange and inappropriate and out of context from our current discussion, but to me it's not, because it's a perfect example of how our thinking has gotten so incorrect and so illogical. And Pierre Spray is the great designer of airplanes. He's the guy that worked with a couple other designers to develop the F-16 and the A-10. These are fantastic planes that are just amazing. But the F-35 is a turkey. It's a terrible plane. It's a horrible plane. And it costs, it's like they've spent $1.5 trillion on this thing. So you can just watch, and all the clips I have are about the decline of our society. And the next one was about Alex Jones versus Dr. Steve Pachinik. Dr. Steve Pachinik is a guest of Alex Jones, and they have these shows all the time. But Steve Pachinik is just saying, it's so stupid what Trump has done with this whole thing with Afghanistan, because he just come out and said that we're going to stay in Afghanistan and we're going to commit more men to it and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Horrific. And then I got an example, and I don't even remember this doctor's name, but this doctor who cured all these cancer patients, mostly with diet changes. Mm-hmm. And he ended up in jail for like a year and a half for doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, and then I go on and I have other crazy news stuff, like sports news and some of the crazy stuff. You know, have you heard about the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight yet?
I'm really not into fights at all, so
I don't blame you. But I think Floyd is going to get about $100 million for this fight.
Oh, geez.
And Connor is probably going to make $30 or $40 million. But what I'm saying is, can you imagine all this money, like $1.5 trillion into this terrible airplane? And then $100 million into this one-day event fight?
Well, I was just watching some link last week or a few days ago about all of the Olympic sites that have basically just been turned to dust. They're just completely ignored, and you know, they've spent hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars on these things over the years. And you just go through country after country after country, like Brazil, China, and on and on and on over the years. And it's just, it's disgusting.
And they're never used again, probably.
They're never used again. Yeah. God. Never, ever again.
Now, are we an insane society?
Is that a question?
Are we in an insane society or what? It's so bizarre what is happening. Oh.
Yeah. And that's just the Olympics. I mean, you know, there's basketball, there's baseball, there's hockey, there's, you know,
it goes on
football and soccer, which is the other football. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for crying out loud. And that's trillions of dollars. That's trillions of dollars a year on that garbage. And for what?
I got to get out my statistics on overpopulation just a second, and if I can find it, keep chatting. I'll have to.
I guess it's at 8.8 billion now or something, isn't it?
I think so, but I wanted to get my notes on how many people starve to death all the time.
Because, oh, geez.
We were talking about all the money that's wasted. Mm-hmm. 10 million children die every year from starvation.
Yeah.
Or starvation-related diseases. And we spend $100 million on a fight.
Yeah.
That lasts one day. Or
an hour.
Or 15 minutes. Or however long it takes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And 10 million children die every year from starvation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the world population grows by 77 million people annually.
That's the lowest estimate.
Is it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's the lowest estimate. It's like in some of the years in the last, you know, decade or two, it's been like over 200 million a year.
Really?
So, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's like the lowest estimate. So,
wow.
It's insane. Yeah. So that's how many New York cities. I mean, that's, you know, New York City is, 8.5 million people.
Oh, I thought it was more than that.
It's probably, maybe it's more. Well, even if it is twice that much, I mean, it's still like, how many New York cities is that?
A lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. So, try and feed all those people and, you know, educate them and clean up their garbage. And
you clean up their garbage is right.
It's unreal.
And 9,000 newborns per hour.
Jeez, eh?
Try to put your mind around that.
Yeah, I was just reading about Africa today, and they're going to be doubling in the next, you know, 30 or 40 years.
Oh, my.
So, and they're on their can already. So, I mean, it's just, you know, they're starved, and there's no education, there's no infrastructure, there's nothing there. And so, yeah, that's
and
great.
The worst thing is just to give them food.
Yeah, just that alone, you know, much less all the rest of it, healthcare and a job and, you know, that pays and a house and, you know, education and cleaning up their, you know, their shit and just giving them clean water and, you know, it's just, you know, power, electricity, everything. I mean, holy crap. What a dumb society. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand. Like, I think, and I was thinking about it today, you know, anybody can predict the future. It's just most people just turn off that ability because I don't know why, but they just do it. And it's just the simplest, easiest thing to do to predict, you know? And so, like, I was able to make the calculations when I was a teenager to find the Maya case.
That's amazing. But you have to be able to think logically to do
that. Well, you just have to think. So just think, you know, it is literally as simple as 2 + 2 = 4. But if you don't think about that, then if you don't think about those things, those very simple, logical, basic things that, you know, that are so, you know, hard to refute, the more you put them together, the less contradictions there are. Well, yeah, great. So if you don't actually take the time to do that, then... Yeah, if you're trying to impress everyone, well, that's just the whole thing. It's an ego thing. It's a miseducation thing. It's so many things put together. I don't know. Just talking to my family recently and all those bickerings I've had recently, I mean, it just makes me realize why the world looks like the way it is, you know? So, and I mean, this is like a relatively tame situation compared to a lot of parts in the world, so.
Oh, sure.
So, this is really nothing compared to what it could be. In my situation, I mean, so.
Oh, yeah.
But it's still insane. So.
Well, the world, I really think we have the potential to really turn things around. I'm an optimist, mm-hmm. even though things certainly have a lot of unbelievable big challenges. Mm-hmm. I really think... the logic of this information is inescapable.
Yeah. And just look at what the Pleiaron made possible with the internet.
Exactly.
WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you got these journalists, you know, I forget his name, is a really good journalist, though. And he was saying that, you know, WikiLeaks has done more in the last 2 years than he's done in his whole lifetime in terms of revealing things to the public.
Wow. That's huge.
It is huge. And it's so useful. And I can see why, you know, Billy does support WikiLeaks. And I don't understand people who are just like, oh, yeah, well, he has, you know, charges laid against him. Well, fuck, anybody can lay charges against anybody these days, you know? Doesn't mean a damn thing. Like, it's just, you know, it's just a way to divert people's attention. But if you're dumb enough to fall for that and not actually look at the information that he's publishing, well, that's, you know, that's the world we live in. That's the world of, you know, assuming, making assumptions, being gullible, and believing, and not using your brain.
Well, Daniel, I want to thank you for a really great hour of conversation. It's always such a pleasure.
Yeah, it's long overdue.
All right, buddy. I'm going to save this and then post it so other people can listen.
Sounds good. All right.
See you. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye. Bye.